So thank you for the introduction, and thank you for inviting me to Toronto and to the University of Toronto. So what I want to talk today is our experience with mixed integer programming and linear programming. But this experience like 20 years. You know, when we started DAS, it was started back in, you know, the 92, 93. We brought it in the US in 98. And FICO acquired it in 2008 because of the synergies with basically a decision management approach that we have at Fair Isaac. So we combine rules, optimization analytics, and predictive analytics. So what I want to talk to you about our general experience with linear programming experience. I want to tell you, you know, how we solve problems faster, you know, today, you know, what problems we solve and how we solve them faster, okay? I'll give you some examples from actual examples that we have some customers. Also, I will try to combine, you know, some work that we do constraint programming, if I have time, okay? So if you look out there, you know, and that comes from previous discussion, what we have before, what you have to solve optimization problems, you have linear programming technologies, integer programming technologies, you have heuristics, you have constraint programming, it comes from... You have heuristics, you have constraint programming, and maybe you don't know, you also have business rules. What are business rules? Business rules is back in the 80s, everybody was talking about artificial intelligence, and basically all this work didn't go anywhere, and that created the idea of business rules. Today's environment, today's environment, actually, the application business rules is much more than the applications optimization in a real-time environment. So selling business rules, the business, is much, much larger than selling optimization as tools, okay? And if you look at predictive analytics sells even more. So you have the company SAS, it's a $2.3 billion company, sells a lot of analytics. You have IBM acquired SPSS. So you know, so you have predictive analytics tools, business rules, and then you have optimization tools. Okay. Now, how do we look at you know? So if you look optimization technology, you want to map the space. What do you have in there? And this is you know, the tools are coming from different companies. It comes from what you see before, like from open source. Okay. It comes from many small companies that they do modeling. It comes from Cplex, now part of IBM, Kurobi, you know, many other companies, small nonlinear companies. But our technology, when we segmented, we said, you know, we have tools, we have optimization solvers, which are basically all these parts. We have linear programming, quadratic programming, digital programming, MIQP, MISLP, SLP. Which is sequential linear programming. You have local search. You have constraint programming. And then you have the modeling part. So you have a modeling language to model, you know, your problem. Then you have the environment where you write all this and you test it in the graduate visual environment. And you have also tools like ODM and XAD, which is basically you can create scenarios and you can manage the rules, and you can run from there all the scenarios, get the results, and compile the reports. Okay, so that's what we have. It's called XAD. Now, those red things are vertical applications. So when you are an energy company and you want to solve a unit commitment problem, you have to take some of these pieces. You have to take the linear programming piece, the mixed linear programming piece, the modeling. You have to do some visualization, and you create your solution. And you start using it and get results, modify the solution. So this is a repetitive approach. Now, when we look at this, you know, when we look at this, we say, okay, you know, what do we have? We have all these things. Which one does it sell? Which one doesn't sell? Which one we're good at? Which one we need to improve? So, you know, every quarter, we go back to this map and we get reports and we find out where we need to improve. Now, linear programming is the standard. Everybody is using linear programming. The linear programming solvers are used everywhere and they're pretty robust. The two linear programming solvers like Cyclex and Express, they don't fail. And it's, you know, when somebody buys an LP, the attitude is that if it fails, it's a bad thing. Okay? So open source fails. We, you know, from usually we take open source, we test it. We don't report those results, but it fails in many of the problems, customer problems we have. Okay? And this is not the, you know, the, this is, when you have an open source solver, it's work of 5 years, we have work of 30 years. And we've seen all the problems that are out there. Okay, so, you know, to test something well, you need to have many problems. Okay, and the problems that are in the public domain are only 1% of the problems we have. Okay, so this is the difference. Now, let me show you, you know, the performance of LP that we have, but this is common in other areas. So LP performance is like this. And in some areas, in some years, in some versions, they don't perform. There's no improvement. Why is this? We haven't found anything which is going to have a drastic improvement to the code. And, you know, in the last code we had last year, we had, you know, considerable improvement. So there are two measures we use. The number of problems we solve, okay, and there's some difficult problems, and also the time that it takes to solve them, okay? So when we test internally, we have many, many rules, but those are some of the rules that we take out and we show in the public. So problems that you solve and problems that you solve in specific amount of time and problems and in time, okay? Now, to be competitive, you need three solvers: primal, you need dual, and barrier. Okay, and those solvers are doing well for many, many different types of problems. So you might, you know, you say, okay, why do I need the primal? The primal is doing well for nonlinear mixed digit programming problems. Okay, why do I need the dual? The dual is doing well because you need the branch and bounds. Why do I need a barrier? The barrier needs for specific very large problems you have. So you need to be competitive. You need to have in your organization three different groups of basically one or two people that they are experts on dual, experts on primal, experts on barrier. And always you need to find talent where you bring in people that these people are, you know. Now, this talent takes 3 years to get adapted with philosophy we have and to be up to speed. So you need to put an investment of 3 years to somebody you hire today, and that guy is going to perform. And there is a probability 50% that this guy is not going to perform. You don't fire him, you know, you move him to consulting, you do something with him. But this is the idea. You know, because these are smart people, they have PhDs, you know, but that's how they evaluate them. Now, there is always a possibility that you get somebody who's becoming a star, and he can do many things, and he can improve many things, which is difficult. It's very rare, okay? Now, I go back to this, and from my own experience, the open source community helps. Why? Because when Cyclex was for a long time the standard, there were, many good people who used to work for Cyclex, okay? And those people, you didn't have enough people that they know all the tricks because they were going into one place. Now, open source opens the space. Many people learn and they get re-educated, learn those old tricks. So, you know, they can work. So that's why you're going to see a proliferation of companies that they do more and more. So it's a good thing. Open source is a good thing. Now, What we see when we go and we look, say, dual. Dual is a good thing. Dual needs to be always fast. So if you put priority, you put priority on dual, then on primal, and then on variable, and then on primal. Okay, that's the. Now let's talk about MIP, which is becoming, you know, which the last 10 years proliferation of MIP solvers, solving MIP problems has been dramatic. Okay, many companies now they solve MIP. It goes like this, so you have the time goes like this, okay? And the number of problems goes like this. Now, MIP problems, when somebody looks at MIP problems, there are many, there are basically two categories of MIP problems. MIP problems that they solve very, very fast, let's say less than 1 second, okay? And MIP problems that they take very long, let's take 1 hour. So when you do analysis like this here, it's tricky because in this data set is all kinds of problems we have. So we are always proposing techniques to do benchmarking of those problems. So how you will do? You know, so there is an airline company that solves 1,000 problems. They want to solve them in 1 day. Okay. We are solving a problem now for a retailer that we solve 10,000 problems. We need to solve them in 4 days. Okay, so there are all kinds of problems. So somebody has to do very careful analysis. I can't say that we do, you know, right now as companies, we do a careful analysis. Difficult task. You need to find the problems. And, you know, the only problems we have is basically problems that we get from customers. Okay? So there is a lot of work that somebody can do from research point. How to evaluate a solver? How to evaluate a solver? This is a big task. Now, look at this. You know, in the beginning there was branch and bound, and then there were valid inequalities, which they are classic and problem specific, and then they became heuristics. And general heuristics and problem-specific heuristics and parallelized. So let me tell you, you know how I feel about this. Like 10 years back, they were, you know, everybody was doing branch and bound, and Express had some amazing stuff that, you know, nobody else had of how to do probing and how to do estimation, and we were finding physics solutions very good, very fast, back in 2000. And Cplex couldn't do it. So we were killing Cplex on that front. But then we were getting some problems from customers that they had, you know, you could solve them very fast if you put some click cuts. And we didn't have that. And Cplex was solving it in no time. So you see the difference, okay? What happened those 10 years is that the solvers, they became very, very robust, and they have all these tricks. But to do this, it's a very difficult task. Why? Because, you know, imagine that you have, let's say, 30 different types of valid inequalities that you have to do. You have 100 heuristics that you have to put there, and you have a branch and bound, okay? And now I come back to my team and I say to my team, you know, look, my branch and bound is very slow. I want to do new things and I cannot do them. So what we did, the last version, is we re-engineered the branch and bound. Basically, he said, you know, look, we have to change the structure. So imagine you go to a code which is so large, re-engineer the branch and bound to do new things, to do new heuristics, to put the constraint programming, to do other things. What a difficult task this is. And also to keep your performance, okay? So, and when we re-engineered the branch and bound, we put decomposition, we wanted to put more decomposition algorithms, we wanted to perform more operations on a node, and that was basically the, you know, and also to solve the problems faster, okay? Now you see Gurobi, very fast. Why is this? Fresh, new code. with a new branch and bound technique, with new stuff. So you say sometimes why a code is becoming fast. People know the tricks, but also new philosophies, okay? So it's, again, every 10 years you have to re-engineer, and even more, So this gives you an idea now, what happens in the code, okay? Now, 3 years back, so let me give you this idea. 10 years back, we had a parallel code. Amazing stuff. It was heterogeneous, so it could work in different computers. Okay? So you could install it in like 3 PCs and 2 Linux, and it would solve the problem. Occasionally, which I can say it was like 10% of the time, it was crashing. Okay? But you could restart it and solve it. We sold only one copy. We sold only one copy of this heterogeneous parallel computing. And then we took it out from the market. We didn't do it. Now, new computers now, that they have multiple core processors, parallel programming has become the standard. Everybody's using it. So our default now is parallel programming, which is basically we use it on a computer with multiple CPUs. The heterogeneous module is out, and only we use now, let's say, Dell, OptiFlex, all these that they have multi-cores, okay? Now has become very popular. Everybody needs that. But the fact now that you can use parallelism, and what we had before, it was non-deterministic parallelism, okay, created the need for deterministic parallelism, okay? And we had the idea to do it first, but Cplex did it first. And deterministic parallelism, it's different than, the previous parallelism. What you have to do is you have to mentally guess how you're going to break the problem and solve it into multiple cores, which is a totally different philosophy. It's not I have all this branch and bound and I distribute it. Deterministic parallelism is you have to do the same thing again and again because, you solve it deterministically. You always have to find the same solution. So you have to break the problem. So new techniques, estimation techniques you have to get to do. So, but you see, the deterministic, we call it internal deterministic, and in one thread it solves in 25, and in four threads it solves 17. And the internal of the opportunistic, it solves in 13. So you see, and you start getting an idea is that the opportunistic, which is basically non-determinism, parallel, it solves faster, but it's non-determinism, okay? So a narrow line doesn't want to get different solution when it runs the problem today or tomorrow. Financial company, if the auditors come in, wants determinism, wants to see the same solution. So you see the difference, okay? And these are some internal problems we have. These are some choral deterministic and what improvements you get, okay? Now, point here is that parallelism is the standard. You need to do parallel computing. And sometimes when you do it, you compete with other solvers and other things that they are not inherently easy to parallelize, and you get big improvements. Now, I'll give you an example. When you go from 8 threads when you go to 4 threads to 8 threads, you might not see these speedups. Okay? So it's not such an easy task there. Now, so as I said, is you had the parallel processors on a network, and this is over. Parallel MIP, same computer, and deterministic MIP, these are the evolution of parallelism for solvers. That gave us an idea also of how to do efficient LP parallelization for LP. So there is also some improvement there, is that, first of all, the barrier has, intuitively, you can parallelize some parts of the barrier, but also combining the three, you can get a speed up. So this is a direction we take if people want to improve LPs to parallelize. Okay. Now, another thing that has become very important is multiple solutions. You know, many companies, they want to get the K-based solutions. They want to get, you know, they have these problems that they have multiple solutions. And you can see is that, you know, how you can get, let's say, the five solutions and the algorithm we have right now, we have experience with this for the last three years, it's very, very efficient. Okay? Now, how many users they use that? Around 1/4 of users, they want to get multiple solutions. Okay? They want to get several solutions to evaluate. Now, directions here and why multiple solutions are used. First is when you have business rules, when you have business rules and strategies, you want to have different solutions because some of the solutions they don't apply to some other inequalities that you haven't put into the system. When you use robust optimization, probably having multiple solutions is a good thing. And when you do strategy refinement, when you have a strategy and you want to refine it, it's much easier when you have multiple solutions. Now, so the next obvious thing is, let's say you have a challenging meet, a very difficult meet, okay, and you want to solve it. What approach you're going to take to solve this meet, okay? So the solvers that are out there, Gurobi, Express, Cplex, they are tuned in out-of-the-box performance. So out-of-the-box, so if they are trying to be as good for a problem from airline as a problem from finance, for a problem from a pharmaceutical, for a logistics. They are trying to do the best in all of them, okay? So if out-of-the-box performance does not scale well, then a model needs to be reformulated. Let's say one technique is you go back, you look at your model. Maybe another model is going to make it faster. What we were doing back in 2000, 2001, that companies evaluate us against Cplex. So at that time it was Express and Cplex. So they will send us the same problems. And we will sign a confidentiality agreement. We couldn't, you know, say. They will tell us, what solution do you get? You know, how fast you get it? So first they're going to get an evaluation license, and they will do it themselves. And then they will tell us, okay, out of the 10 problems, Cplex beat you at 8 problems, and you won at 2. We will send you the 8 problems, and we want to see how best you can do. Now, our people are pretty good, like the Cplex people are pretty good. So when we will look at those problems, we could, by doing some tuning, we could beat Cplex by 50% consistently in those 8 problems. But then Cplex could do the same thing. So there was always a fight, you know, and at that time we're talking about we had one big evaluation every week. So it was always a fight, you know, about this turnaround, you know, I beat you on this, I beat you on this. So it was a big thing. And forget about the Meeply problems. The Meeply problems were nothing. You know, we're talking about actual difficult problems from customers. So the optimizers, they were pretty tired solving, you know, this problem, but they were getting ideas, okay? And that was improving code. Because when you see problems, you improve the code. So we said, you know, the last, 5 years, we said, why don't we find out a way to tune the code automatically, okay? Like, we have a tool to tune the code. So in 2006, we developed a code which is called the Express Tuner, and manually. And we gave that to the code to the tuner. To the tuner, we gave it to the customers, and some of them, they did it themselves. So see, you know, before I go to the tuner, let me tell you what we did. So in 2006, there was a conference. Actually, this started in 2006. We saw that Balas and Saxena, they solved the problem from Miplik. So I went back to the team. I said, you know, look, this problem. Oh, you know, Balas and Saxena can solve it. Can we solve this problem? And they looked at it, and they solved the problem. So I said, okay, you know, I want you to get back to me, the Miplik problems, and find out a way to solve all of them. So I gave a goal to solve all of them, and they told me how long. I want 12 months to solve all the Miplik problems that they are in right now. Okay? And, you know, they came back after 6 months, and they solved most of them. But they left those problems. And if you look at those problems, they improve the bound, but they're still not solved. And nobody has solved those problems. And we wrote a case study you can find in Journal of Computing, but the point I want to make, the combination, solving those problems, it was basically the ideas I told you before. Having a problem, look at the structure, you know, do some tricks, do this, and put it on the tuner, put it for like 3 days on the tuner on a machine, because we have like 30 machines in our premises, you know, and solve it, get ideas, and do this, okay? So we wrote that paper, which is basically, I don't think anybody has built any solution from those that we did, and nobody solved these problems. And solving those problems also, it was a combination of having good valid inequalities. We used some lift and project cuts from Bala, some other stuff, and that helped us a lot to compete against Cplex, okay? Now, if you look at the tuner, and this applies, this philosophy applies on any solving, you know, what we did before, is basically automation. You put something to work for you for a long time. And this is something in FairEyes that we do constantly. You know, we basically do data mining. It's a company data mining. And to improve optimization, you need data mining. I'll show you why. So basically what we did is we put the computers to solve, we said what strategies we want, we had all these different parameters. We have like 300 parameters now. I don't know what they are. We have also some secret ones that we set, and nobody knows. So, and then we start putting some tuning methods. We call them adaptive, basically genetic algorithm stuff, okay? And you could, you know, decide how you search. You want to search for optimality, you want to search for finding best solution, and so on. And also we have a way to visualize the results. Somebody, you know, you could visualize the results and see the control parameters and see the white and red, rank them, and immediately get some rules out of what problems solve well. Now, you could see also the log and benchmark, all this stuff. And, you know, again, you can see here, you know, who's doing well and so on. So, that was a complex tuning methodology. But the point is that we learn a lot out of this exercise, okay? So what I want to show you now is that how we use it today. Now, when we did it at that time, it was only for one problem. So you give me one problem, and you put it on the tuner, and the tuner tells you which parameters will do the best work. And it's going to run for like 24 hours. Run for 24 hours, fine. Let me give you this example. We did this for planogram optimization. And this is an example we did for one of the biggest retailers in the U.S. We do this project, we finish this project. I can't say the name of the customer, but basically we've done two things for this customer. So this is one of the biggest, I think second or third biggest retailer in the U.S. And we started with this project, basically how to put stuff on a retail store, on the retail shelf. So you have a cereal and you want to place it. How are you going to put the cereal? So this is a meat problem, okay? And it's not very challenging. You will never go to optimality. It's a packing problem. It's difficult to go to optimality. But you can find good solutions like 5 minutes, 2-3 minutes, okay? Now, the second problem was that they have is that somebody walks into the store. How am I going to design the store in order to maximize my profits? This is a much more difficult problem because in that problem you have constraints, in this problem you have rules. So this is more looking like a constraint satisfaction problem. This is more looking like a packing problem. This is applicable. It works fine. You know, it runs pretty well. This is still in the infancy. You know, we've done a lot of work on this. But this is a good problem. So it's rules. And now also what you can do is you can combine these two and do something like an analysis. Now, for them, and that's where I want to bring the idea of rules, is we have to combine rules with optimization, okay? So rules, there is nothing else than constraints that you might have, okay? So companies, they want to capture those constraints as rules because somebody wants to change it, okay? But the idea here is that how do you translate rules into constraints? So this is some other part of research we do, which is still in infancy. So this is, again, another PhD topic. How do you translate a rule system to an optimization model and solve it and do the loop? Okay? We had, like, say, blocking rules, inventory rules, demand forecast, and so on. And this part was, we have a rule system, which is called Blaze Advisor, have the rules. Then these are rules that they have to be satisfied. Assortment, planogram, decision rules, self-layout parameters. And then, using these rules, you send them to optimization, it gives you a solution. Now, and we build this visual stuff. Now, most of the time, the solution is not going to be feasible. So what you will get back is which rules are infeasible, okay? Because what we have here are soft constraints. But basically, this is the idea of soft constraints. So when constraint is soft, you allow this constraint to violate with a penalty. And, you know, the manager can see and identify with the red, which are, and then go back and resolve and so on. And then finally get the output and get the utilization and so on. Now, we had hard problems here, many problems. We're talking about 300 stores and do this every day. Okay? And not only that, solve this problem repetitively with different rules and different parameters, okay? So let's say we had 5 hard knee problems, okay? The goal was to get a 1.5% solution gap within 5 minutes for this problem. Computer used. So what we did is, if we were doing the default settings of Express, we were getting 300 seconds and so on. You see, when we did the Express tuned, we were getting those results. Now, what you see here is that you have those 5 problems, and you see the difference. You know, the gap, some problems, they were more easy, some more difficult than the other. Okay? Now, the goal here is to go and take now all the problems and develop tuning parameters that go and look at all the problems. Okay? So the idea is that you go from a family of problems and you use data mining to set parameters. Okay? I started this research back in 2005. So how you tune a solver with, let's say, 500 problems? You can use data mining to find parameters for all these problems. It's a difficult task. It's not easy, but it's doable. This methodology is going to be very good for these 500 problems. There is work that Professor Hammer did in logical analysis. There are other rules that you can define using even simple trees, classification trees, support vector machines. You can do a lot of things there. Okay? So this is, again, another big research topic. I have a solver. I have 1,000 problems. How do I tune my solver for this? Of course, when you publish a paper, you have to say that you tune it, because it's kind of be unethical to say that, you know, look, oh, it does better, it beats everybody. So this is another issue, you know, you have to disclose at some point. So data mining is becoming very, very important. Now, we have this, you know, we are using this idea of, let's say, a self-adaptive tree. When you do branch and bound, the parameters change. Okay? Again, you can do this thing with data mining. You use data mining, you learn, you do something which is called reinforcement learning, and you can improve your code to do this. Again, more complex to do. Now, I'll show you another example and why I do this example. This example is an example which is very difficult. NFL scheduling. So you saw, you know, last week, yesterday there was the NFL schedule. This NFL schedule is produced every year using optimization. Okay? Like baseball scheduling is developed by a company that Mike Trick has with Nemhauser, and they solve it. But NFL is particularly difficult. Okay? And it's difficult because to solve the problem, to find the optimal solutions, you have to go very deep in the branch and bound tree. Not only that, you need a lot of expert knowledge of the problem. So somebody like me, or you know, somebody from you say, oh, I want to write a dissertation in sports scheduling. You will need a good 10 years to learn this problem, to solve all kinds of problems, to learn these techniques. It's very complicated. Okay? It has hard constraints. These are must-have. It has soft constraints. And you need to penalize. Now, the other point I want to make is that there is a lot of work that in business we do about the relationship between hard constraints and soft constraints. A lot of work, how we penalize. Okay, again, this is customer, like the customer comes to us and tells us what he wants to do. Sometimes he's not right, sometimes he's right, but we have to follow this process, which is lengthy. So this is the schedule from, this is a schedule with specific score, and that was for several years back. But you see, that's how you do this, that's what, you know, the company, the consulting company we work with, gives to the NFL. The NFL takes this, and they are very well visualizing it, analyzing, making changes. So the NFL experts, that they know this very well. And here is what I want to show you is that, you know, the last, you know, we were doing this research from 1999 to 2005, and this is the complexity and how the score was improved from the different schedules. The other point I want to make is that the guy who solves this problem doesn't have a PhD in operations research. Now, if you tell me, Alkis, you know, find out three very good people in operations to solve these problems, it's very difficult. I would say, you know, it's very, very difficult. And that guy can solve this problem because of all this expert knowledge he got through the years. Okay, so this is another thing to remember when you go from theory to practice. Some problems are very, very difficult to solve. And this, like when we're solving this, now we have more processor, we're using a 24-processor computer, and we were getting the Optima solution in 12 to 24 hours. Okay? But this is done once a year during 2 months. 1 month for calculating solutions, 1 month for analyzing and picking up the final one. So again, what you have to think is there are problems that you want to solve in 1 hour, there are problems that we want to solve in 1 week, there are problems that you want to solve in 1 year. Again, difficult optimization problems. Okay, so you have to also think about the long time horizon for solving those problems. Now, I want to show you here work that we've done for combining constraint programming and linear programming and mixed linear programming. This is work we started like 8 years ago and still is valid. You know, there is not a substantial progress between these two. And actually, CP solvers, they are stuck. They can't progress. We don't see any progress of CP solvers. Okay? Although you have strong progress of MIP, like the new iLog, CPLEX version, the new IBM is strong. Kurobi, Express are pretty strong. CP solvers, there is always my theory was that CP is like an agent. CP is there to help in the branch and bound, to help in the domain, reducing the domain. So that's where CP can help. Okay. Now, the idea of global constraint in CP is very strong, but it needs a lot of computing, a lot of algorithms to make it powerful and to use it for different. So I think that's where open source can help, I think, a lot in CP. It can help a lot with constraint programming. But let's say open source CP solver, pretty strong, can help us speed up things with CP. But now stuck. We are in a stuck position. Now, so we were saying, we have CP optimization. How are we going to use CP? And the basic idea was to use CP as an engine where users are used as a slave. So basically, you solve your LP, you solve your planning problem, you solve, and then you take the solution and you apply CP, you find feasible schedules, and you do this process, okay? So basically, you have the master problem is a MIP, the subproblem is CP. If it's feasible, it's fine. If it's not feasible, you add some valid inequalities to your original problem, you solve it, okay? Research has been done, that's what, again, that's what I see, again and again, and that's what some companies are applying in doing production scheduling. We did a project, several years back, which is called LISCOS with BASF, PNG, CARS, and Paint, and we applied this, and it worked pretty well for those, okay? When we tried to commercialize this, we didn't go anywhere. It was a difficult thing to commercialize. So we went, for Barbeau, we do Paint, and you have the process here, and what we did is that, so you want to find how you were going to sequence, you have setup costs, okay, and what we did is you have forecasting, lot sizing, and so on, and then you have the production, you have to do the schedule. So So in the traditional methodology, the Masi Kappa depends on the way production orders are scheduled, and you had overestimation, underestimation, and so on. When we did this approach, basically the lot sizing was solved using mixed linear programming, and the scheduling was solved with CP, and we combined these two. Now, what we found out of this, because that was some research work for the European community, was that was good, but only for small size problems, difficult to scale. So somebody, you know, to make it this powerful, needs to make it robust, and I find this difficult. Okay, and the reason is that you have multiple constraints here that will complicate your CP engine. I want to stop here, and I want to go back to something which I want to add here, and I didn't have a slide, but this is going to interest you. Now, in fair Isaac, okay, let me tell you what we solve probably problems for banking, retail banking. Say how you give credit to people. Okay? And so these are simple assignment problems with constraints on the side, which are basically loan default and so on, categories, you know, segments that they cannot take more. But imagine a problem that you have 100 million customers. You would decide which one to offer a credit card and which one not, and how much credit limit to give. Okay? Now, how do we solve this problem? First, we have to do the predictive analytics. Then we have to solve the optimization problem. And then we have 100 million customers. What do we do? Are we going to send to these 100 million customers an offer? No. We might send to a smaller version, like a million or 500, see how they react, do a test, and then get back, and so on. But the most important thing is to develop strategies for these people. And what I mean by strategies, we take the data for the customers and the action we're going to take, basically give him this credit line and this card, and now do data mining and segment those people and find rules that we can use for later on. So when you go into a store and they say to you, okay, you know, we want to give you a credit card, or we want to offer you, these are not coming because that day or that week they solve an optimization problem, because they develop some business rules to develop, you know, those, you know, those analytics, so they can make the offers. So this is mostly the problems we do. We combine optimization with predictive analytics at the beginning, and then we provide optimization with data mining later on, these three, and we send out, you know, we create the rules. And now this is becoming important with the new regulations in the US. What is happening in Europe, all this, Basel, all these are, you know, optimization problems are becoming very large. But we're talking about problems with 50 million accounts. 50 million accounts and 2,000 offers. This is, you know, imagine how many non-zero you have in that problem. So it's a difficult problem to solve. It's not a hard problem computationally. So you have to break it down. You have to do some kind of master decomposition, Bender's decomposition, so on. Okay. So that gives you an idea of the problem we solve and how we solve them. So I'm open for questions. Yes.
What do you mean? What is complexity?
Complexity is every year the NFL is giving more and more constraints. So let me give an example. So in the beginning, there were only one TV station that was broadcasting. Now there are four or five. ABC was doing it sometimes on ABC and sometimes put it on ESPN. This is very powerful. We're talking about the billions and billions of dollars in advertising and other revenues. So NFL has become a superpower. You know, the money that they got, the revenues, have grown substantially because of this. And then the score. The score is because you get a better score. And this is because of you know more about the problem and you can solve and you can get better schedules and you can improve. Now, when we get the names of the teams, we don't know which teams are there. But now you have scores on the teams. So basically good teams, bad teams. And they have a score based on what they did last year, what players they got, and so on. So they have a score. So we know the score. We can figure out what are the teams. But we don't do that. I don't think they do that. So you can have a kind of a game which favors one team. So you're trying to avoid favoritism for a team. So you need to create a fair schedule. Difficult. Yes. Yes. Always my strategy was to keep on parity with everybody. With before it was a two game. It was Cplex and Express, and Cplex had a big chunk of the market because it was first in the market, and it was difficult even to enter because Cplex was a very and still is very good code. And the latest version of Cplex is very strong because Achterberg is very strong, and although Cplex lost like three of the key players, we see Cplex still doing great things, and this is the outcome I said before, innovation. When you want to create innovation, you want to create the environment where you have, you see that open source innovation is going to come ultimately. And the code is going to become better. Okay, and that's the outcome. People think, see what is happening wrong in the open source, learn about the problems, get this knowledge, and new things, good things happen. Okay? Now, to compete, always my strategy was don't try to put all your effort and try to be like 100 times faster or 2 times faster even. Try to be on parity, but be creative. Do a multi-core machines. Do multiple solutions. Have Moselle now on the cloud. We have modeling language Moselle. We're going to release it, and it's going to be on the cloud. So many of the customers now, they can run Moselle on 100 processors very easily. Very easily. So this is going to be an addition. This is going to be an advantage. Now, at the same time, many people say, oh, why don't you have more solvers? Why don't you spend time on MINLP? When you go and you become white, you lose focus. Your focus is LP. Your focus is MIP. If you lose focus and you lose people and people do other things, you're going to go slow. So this is... We have an LP, but it's not a revenue driver. But for some problems, it was pretty good. For, let's say, refinery problems, it was very good. Very good. But for some other problems, it was not good. But you can't do everything. You know, in MIP, 10 years back, you couldn't do everything. You had to be good in specific problems. Now you can do many things, okay? Computers are fast. You can put some expertise in the solver and learn, do some data mining, do things like that and make the code fast. Okay? Yeah. Absolutely. Again, the idea is the idea is not to scrap it after 5 years. But the situation you are in, let's say Guro becomes with a very fast code, you have to do it. You have to change the branch and bound. You don't scrap the whole code. I would love to go and say we scrap the code and we have a new code. that this is not going to happen. This is not going to happen. So you are stuck with the code structure. 10 years ago, we had a full Fortran code. Full Fortran code. Everything is Fortran. And that's how we started. And C++ was C code. 100% C. We were back in 95, we were a Fortran code with little C. 1998, full Fortran code. 60% Fortran, 40% C. And in 2002, we said, forget about it. We moved to Fortran. It took us 2 years to have a steady version. Like, we could fix all the bugs, okay, that they will come in, like, say, the first 3 months. But it will take us 2 years to come back again. At the same time, Cplex had done all the good estimations, all this, had done MIQP, all this, and progressed. And then we came up, it took us 2 years, we came up with a very good code. Now we have a branch and bound, you know, a different branch and bound, more elaborate. But the trick now is on the multi-core machines. How are you going to speed up your progress in the process in the multi-core machines? And again, the trick is going to be is how you compete on customer problems, because that's what it counts. Right now we have a deficiency on public problems, like the Mittelmann or the MIPLIB are to throw to the garbage and to start from the beginning. That's my philosophy. We have to put an effort to create a good, strong, hard problems that they are actually applicable. There are unit commitment problems out there. There are other problems that they are, you know, useful.
We've really difficult problems that are
Of coefficients. And this is another totally topic. So robust optimization is, you know, there's no right now commercial solver which does robust optimization. And basically the robust optimization techniques, a few out there which, you know, I don't know, you know, they still to be judged, but mostly you have to increase, it's basically increasing the model size. So you solve it by increasing the model size. So again, it's basically resolving with a larger model, finding a robust solution. We use robust optimization. We've tried robust optimization. Still, we find the customer cannot understand the idea. What is the idea? So you know, it's difficult to understand why they're useful. So is it they think, oh, but this is simulation, and it's not simulation. So we have difficulty passing the idea. When we were doing robustness, we were doing robustness or robust for the FICO score. So we have the FICO score, which is basically a score that's calculated based on, you know, our algorithm in FICO, which is totally different than optimization. Okay, and then we introduced the robust, like the FICO score that changes with economic conditions, basically a robust score. So what happens if the unemployment changes? What happens to the score of X? Consumer. So it's same thing, but you know, the banks, they can understand it for what is that? Difficult to validate. Robust optimization, easy to validate, but difficult to understand. So two different things. So we're still in the beginning. For some financial problems, for portfolio optimization with robustness, easy. You know, customer, you know, understand. But again, I don't know what is the validity of those results, if they have real significance when you apply it. Do they make money? I don't know. Can't say about that. Yeah. So, okay. Yes. So constraint programming, how we see it is constraint programming came from the idea was again from expert systems. Like you have all these constraints and you want to find a physics solution or you want to find a set of physics solutions. I do propagation, I do this, I do that. So the first application of constraint programming was scheduling. So I have this scheduling problem to solve. I don't want to develop a specialized heuristic for that. I want to have a general black box that I can throw scheduling problems there, find solutions. What we found out is that as you put more constraints, more difficult to do this. Also, as you expand your dimension, like you want to do utilization or you want to do resources, resource optimization became more and more difficult. So you have to add more and more kind of agents into the picture. So the code, again, became difficult to maintain, very difficult to maintain, and it became, the customer sometimes became unhappy. Because a customer who has a complex problem and he always wants to change, to add, and he doesn't, nothing happens, he is unhappy. You know, he paid for something, he had expectations, and that doesn't happen. Now, for problems that the customer was naive and he had the limited number of expectations, probably did well for many years. But what we saw is stop of research. There is a company now by Pascal von Hendrick, which is doing local search and constraint programming. Pascal is pretty good in expectations, pretty good in constraints. He has written basically all the CP codes, so he knows what is happening. So I think there might be a good success there for some specific problems. Now, how do I use it for my benefit? I will break out the good things of CP, those global constraints and the algorithms. I'm trying to find out how I can use it on my LP or MIP code as an agent to do pre-solve, to do propagation, to reduce my space, to go and solve a problem that I cannot solve with MIP. And that's why I developed the node, more capabilities to do on the node, because more capabilities to do on the node, I can do this. I can put these agents, and these agents can do many, many things and learn. So the next thing which is going to happen, if it happens, is learning. You learn, and you know you have a solver that learns and adapts by itself, which is a difficult task. You need a team of like 30 people to do this. So you know we have a team of 15. So this is, you know, and you need also new ideas. You need somebody who knows about logic. You need somebody who knows about software engineering. So it's, you need to find good talents, which is difficult.